Kissimmee Utility Authority to order. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The next item of business is installation of the new board member, which is me.
Okay. Please raise your right hand. I state your name.
I, Jean.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support, protect, and defend.
I will support, protect, and defend.
The charter and bylaws of the Kissimmee Utility Authority.
The charter and bylaws of the Kissimmee Utility Authority.
Against all enemies, domestic and foreign.
Against all enemies, domestic and foreign.
And that I will bear true faith, loyalty, and allegiance to the same.
I will
bear true faith, allegiance, and loyalty to the same. Okay. That I am entitled to hold office under the charter.
I am entitled to hold office under the charter.
That I will faithfully perform all the duties of the director of KUA.
I will perform all the duties of the director of KUA.
On which I am about to enter.
On
so
which
help
I'm
me
about on. To enter. So help me God.
There you go. Congratulations.
Thank you. Seems like I've been here forever, so here we go again on another trip. The next thing is election of officers. I need a motion for chair. Have a motion for chair.
I motion for Kathleen Tucker to be the next chair.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any other nominees? If not, then we'll, by acclamation, we have a new board chair.
I
just want to say one thing. It's been an absolute joy to be up here and be your chairman. And I just have enjoyed it thoroughly. I've had a really good time with all of you. I'll be probably talking more now than I'm not up here.
Oh, man, give her back to Gavin.
And we surely thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And I was going to say, Jeannie, it's nothing against you in any way. I appreciate it. I have learned a lot from you these past years. I just want everybody to have an opportunity.
No, I think it's absolutely time. And in fact, when Manny was said, a couple of months ago, when he and I was telling Brian, I said, there's no way in the world it should be shared. Every one of us has the ability to be a chair and should have that honor. And I'm proud to turn it over. I was just proud to be there. So it is time for new leadership. So I'm fine with it.
Thank you.
I'm good. So Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, that's Vice
yes.
Chair.
Yes. do we have nominations for the Vice Chair?
I nominate Director Ethel Urbina.
Do I have a second?
I second it.
I'm sorry, what?
You just got nominated for Vice Chair.
any other nominations? Then we will accept Ethel Urbina as the Vice Chair by acclamation. So, nominations for Secretary.
I nominate Manny.
Do I have a second?
I second that.
Any other nominations? Then we will have Manny as our secretary by acclamation.
Yay. Yes.
Do I have nominations for vice secretary?
I nominate Ray for vice secretary.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any other nominations? Then Ray will be vice secretary by acclamation. And Jeannie will be director.
Emeritus.
Well, her title then is director, correct?
Yes, just director.
Okay.
I go back to just being plain old director.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I would expect no less from you, Mayor.
And now, awards and presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair. The first item was is going to be a lineman appreciation and Mayor Alvarez going to present this.
Before I call up the linemen that are here today, my name is Jose Alvarez. I'm the mayor of the city of Kissimmee, for those of you that don't know. First, I want to apologize to our line workers. This was supposed to be done in August. But we had a little hurricane knocking on door when we were going to have that commission meeting, and we had to cancel it. But it's been sitting in my desk until today when I brought it here. And I'll read the proclamation. It says, whereas Florida Line Worker Appreciation Day is August 26th, and the city of Kissimmee is celebrating the Kissimmee Utility Authority's line workers and the hard work they do every day to keep the lights on in our community. And whereas our community relies on safe, reliable electrical power and the line workers who make it happen by putting their lives on the line every day so we can enjoy the comfort of our homes. And whereas Florida line workers are highly skilled professionals trained to work safely and efficiently during high winds, rain, and other inclement conditions. When needed, they selflessly leave their families to travel to other parts of the country to help restore power to home and businesses struggling after a storm. And whereas even when there's no storm or hurricane, line workers toil daily with high voltage electric lines as they dangle high above the ground in Hamas's, well, they added a word that the mayor didn't know about. Shame on them. To keep the lights on. Collectively, line workers maintain the nation's more than 5.5 million miles of local distribution line. And whereas 2012, the Florida House of Representatives created Line Workers Appreciation Day, honoring the thousands of workers risking their lives daily to ensure delivery of reliable electric service throughout the state. Now, therefore, we, the City Commission for the City of Kissimmee, do hereby proclaim August 26, 2019, as Line Worker Appreciation Day in the City of Kissimmee in honor of KUA's line workers and thank them for all they do on this special day of gratitude and recognition. And if linemen can please come up so I can turn this over to them.
Congratulations, guys.
Yay! Hey, lineman.
Yeah, if I may, board, this is just a portion of the linemen that are here, and it's also we've got close to 300 employees here at KUA, as you well know. Yeah, they lay their life on the line going out there doing that stuff, but, you know, we've got a lot of other workers here that are equally important as these guys to keep this going. So thank you for everything.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Come on up.
Medina could not be here. She, I'm going to recognize her for 15 years of service. She's an administrative assistant to our customer service department.
Oh,
let's use that picture.
Who has 15?
So who's Nijesa? Who's Nijesa?
Well, you know what? I messed up.
Yeah.
What was he saying?
So we have four people that are going in the 25-year club, and one's in the club.
Oh.
and can't get out.
Is that the Mickey
Mouse? No matter what.
He will not see.
Love it when we are able to provide assistance to
folks in our community outside of what we do every day, and I couldn't think of a better person to have the employee than one.
Congratulations.
Our vice chair, Ethel Urbina.
Hi, Felipe. Felicidades.
Our
a day off with Bay.
Woo! I'm on this
Our secretary, Manny Ortega.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Assistant Secretary Ray Hemphill.
And here's a parking space special for you.
Nice. Thank you very much.
Mayor Kissimmee.
Here's some tickets for Osceola Arts. Go enjoy a good show.
Thank you very much.
And then last but certainly not least, Director Jeannie Van Meter.
There you go. Congratulations. Thank you for everything.
Now we'll give you all a second if you have places you need to go and
work
you need to do.
Did we have flu shots out here? Because I've had a bunch of them. I haven't had one in 20 years.
So I couldn't.
Yeah.
So now I can. But since I'm
finally
sleeping in. I
don't really enjoy. I catch it with cold.
I've had that, like when I sit like this and I cry. Yeah, it hits a nerve in here and it just kind of goes.
And I know we have a lot of other people in here, but this is, that was their money. And I felt so bad that we couldn't do it in August.
Feeling it.
Mother Nature.
Okay, next on the agenda is hear the audience. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak? Seeing no one, we'll go to the consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, like sign. Consent agenda passes. Informational presentations.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got one item for under informational. I asked staff to put together a presentation to talk to you a little bit about our preparation, the finances, and talk a little bit about the operations and the process we went through in preparing for Hurricane Dorian. And we've got Larry Madden and Kevin Crawford. They're going to tag team this a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Kevin's going to lead us off here.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian. And Madam Chair, as Brian mentioned, we wanted to give you a quick synopsis of KUA's response to Hurricane Dorian, the hurricane that wasn't, at least for Kissimmee, and we're grateful for that. And we will go into some detail about what we do, how we do storms, and the potential risks they present to us as a utility and how we've mitigated some of those risks. And so we wanted to give you this. Now, bear in mind that we're still, in terms of the dollar parts of the presentation, we're still accumulating those costs. It was obviously rather recent, and when we get the more firm numbers, we'll share those with you. So some of these you'll see today are estimates, so just be mindful of that, but we'll update you as soon as those are solid numbers. So just to give you a quick comparison, tale of two storms, we wanted to show you Hurricane Irma, which September 2017, in not too distant memory, was a cost to KUA customers of about $1.7 million. And the outages we had for that storm were about 38,000. For mutual aid, we had 80 linemen that participated with KUA to help restore power. And the restoration time was about 75 hours. So looking, comparing that to Dorian, September of 2019, 2 years later, the cost of that storm, even though there were zero outages and no restoration time required, was about $600,000. That may be more, but we don't think it will be any less. and we had a mutual aid crew on site through the storm of 42 linemen, and Larry's going to go into more detail about the logistics of how and why that is, and we'll share with you what we do on a more specific basis in terms of operations. But that's just to let you see the comparison of those two events.
Kevin?
Yes, sir.
You're probably going to mention it, but I'm assuming this is all reimbursable?
I will. That's a great question, and I'll address that now. Thank you, Director. Madam Chair, the way that this works is with IRMA, this is a reimbursable expense from FEMA. And traditionally what we do is anytime we incur a storm cost like this, we will submit all the required documentation, of which there is a significant amount, to FEMA, and they will reimburse us whenever they have the opportunity to do that. I'm being gracious in those comments, if you'll forgive me. Dorian, we are still trying to determine with FEMA if those costs will be reimbursable. The reason being, Director, is that we had zero outages. And the typical FEMA nomenclature says that when there is no outage, therefore the costs that you incurred for that storm are typically not reimbursable through FEMA. We're not optimistic that those costs will be reimbursable for Dorian. Yes, sir.
And one other thing. We're 2 years removed from Irma, and we haven't been reimbursed the $1.7 million.
So... A no is as good as a yes in terms of the FEMA reimbursement. And so that's, to answer your question, that's a brief overview. Now, I'll get in some details about the specific numbers momentarily, but that is the general gist of how that works. Thank you, Director. Any other questions that the board has? All right. So moving into how does KUA then compare to other utilities in our state when it comes to storm responses? Well, total FMEA costs that we're able to gather, I think the FMEA conducted a survey. There were 21 respondents to that of the 32 or 3, I think, in the FMEA group. The total cost statewide was about $114 million. Now, that's just our peers in the municipal world. $115 million, roughly. To date, now this is through June, FMEA conducted a survey of their members. They have been reimbursed $16 million of that $115 from FEMA. Now, that's 2 years later. And some change. So the pay time is very slow with FEMA, unfortunately. One of the bigger, I'll share that a little bit later, one of the bigger losses in the state. Total KUA for IRMA, 1.7, and as I just mentioned to you, $0 from FEMA at this point. So you may say, well, what do we do? How do we get that money? Well, we meet with FEMA, we communicate with FEMA. Some municipals have had better luck for whatever reason, and most have not. And the bureaucratic process that we have to go through to submit forms, I'll sum it by this saying this, KUA has done everything that we are required to do to get the money. At every instance along the way, they acquire approval. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to find out, is the 1.7 approved by them but not yet paid?
Yes, ma'am. That is 1.7 that we have submitted to them and has up to this point, but nothing has been disallowed that we have submitted, and that's our total 1.7. Yes,
ma'am. So we know that it will come.
That is the anticipation. Now, as you know with FEMA, and to get down in the weeds a little bit, what they can do is, and what they used to historically do is they would pay you for what you expect your cost to be, and then they could go back and deobligate those funds and ask for them back. And they have done that to many utilities in the state. And so now I think their approach is a little more guarded, so they don't like to disperse the funds until they're absolutely certain. And I think that's why there's a lot more additional levels of approval required before you get the money. But, yes, ma'am, those have all been approved up to this point from FEMA.
Correct.
And, this is our manager of accounting, Dan Getz, and he has a comment. Dan works very specifically with FEMA on these reimbursements, so he has some thoughts.
So that was a total cost for us, and then the amounts were, we submitted was that amount and that amount.
Okay, all right, got you. So point of clarification, thank you, Dan.
You're welcome.
That the 1.7 was a total cost. The 1.3, we actually submitted 1.3 to FEMA. So it's a little bit less than that because they do say certain costs are not allowable. That's the total out-of-pocket KUA incurred. And thank you, Nan, for that clarification.
Madam Chair, if I can add, so FEMA doesn't pay us, government entities, directly. When FEMA pays, it goes to Tallahassee. Then we have to wait for Tallahassee to submit payment. Because there's been certain times that we have been asking FEMA to pay us back from certain storms that we've gone through. FEMA has paid Tallahassee, and Tallahassee sat on the money, figuring out and asking for more and more and more and more paperwork. So it's not, I don't like to say that we can blame FEMA. It's the process that we've had, and we've had times that we've gone to D.C. and tried to negotiate with some members of Congress, and I think they're looking at this in ways where FEMA can pay directly to the entities to be a faster type of a repayment. So that's something that's been in the work, and we've been trying to get done in D.C. For a while to get it approved.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mayor Alves makes an excellent point. I appreciate the clarification, Mr. Mayor. That is absolutely right. It is the delays that we typically see are at the state level. The FEMA, they have a pretty robust process, even though it is involved, but the hangups that we have seen are mostly at the state level. Thank you. That is exactly
right. And if I may add, Madam Chair, before I forget, this year with this storm was a little bit different. All the mayors, we received a call right before the storm hit from a representative from the White House that was appointed. The White House represented representatives to represent mayors in different parts of the state. And this year, for the first time, we had a direct contact into the administration for issues. So they contacted me. Myself and the city manager had a phone conference with this individual. We now have his contact. And so we are now allowed to go to him if we see that delays are coming from Tallahassee. So the administration, because of so many senators in Congress bringing it up, the issues that we've been having, has made that move to have someone there that is going to be able to hopefully expedite and help us through the Tallahassee ordeal. So this year, this is something new that just happened this year in this storm.
Is that for cities only, or is it for KUA?
No, this is
that apply to KUA?
Us government entities. KUA falls under us entity, government. And so this is something that if we see a delay or if we see a problem, and, I should have told you, we can utilize that. We have that individual now, his direct line. And this is, like I said, it's something new. We've never seen it before. It's something that they just rolled out this year. And every mayor was included in that phone call.
Mayor, can I ask you another question? Chair, can
sure,
I ask
you
a
can
question?
Ask me one, and I'll pass it along.
Thank you. Does KUA also have a direct line?
No.
Or we have to go through the city?
So,
how is it going to help us is what I'm saying.
Well, it's going to help you because KUA is the city. And so it's affecting the city. And so if this is something that we see, and like I said, something new. It's a new process that we were all stunned because when that phone call came through, believe it or not, we started getting phone calls from other mayors. Hey, Jose, did you get a phone call from this guy? And I'm going, yeah, I got it. And we all started because we were stunned that this happened. So it's a new avenue that they have. But we do have it if we need to use it. What myself and the city manager decided to do is we will hold that card for the right moment to go after the funding, because not only do they owe from the past hurricane to KUA, we haven't got paid since almost 4 years ago. And so we're adding everything for the right moment so we can go after them. To try to help us out in this process. So KUA, if it's going through the same thing, can be, partnering with us, and that way we can have one phone call, one issue at hand.
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Mayor. We will definitely be reaching out to your staff then to utilize that opportunity. Thank you very much for letting me square that.
Yeah.
Thank you. So,
can I ask another question?
Mm-hmm.
We're becoming formal now. my question, in the difference between the 1.7 and 1.3, the 400,000 that was not allowed, is already 2 years ago, so it's already in the expenses from 2 years ago, but yes, KUA ate it. Right?
Yes, ma'am. That's the best way to put it, yes. So the total for Dorian, and I this shared this with you in a previous slide, but just as a recap, the cost that we incurred were about $600,000 to this point that we have averages for or estimates for. And, again, speculative at best about FEMA's ability to reimburse that based on the fact that there was no restoration work that actually occurred for that event. So it's a mixed blessing in that way. So how does KUA compare? Let's look really quickly at how does KUA prepare. And the first line of defense that our board has had the great wisdom and foresight to utilize for events just such as this is KUA's strong reserves. We have $15 million in our self-insurance fund. Now, those reserves particularly are not just for hurricanes, although, as you can see, that's the primary source of the greatest loss that we've incurred through that particular those type of events. But we utilize that for other forms of losses as well. But that is the first thing that we've done. And to Director Urbina's point, that is where those funds originally came out of, through that reserve. Now, we replenish that reserve every year from rate stabilization to make it $15 million. We want to keep that balance as the board mandated $50 million. But that's essentially what happens is our customers end up, you know, taking that difference up. But thank you to the board for the foresight for that. A lot of our peers are not in such a fortunate position. And we are very, very fortunate to be in that spot. System improvements and aggressive maintenance. Every year we bring to you what we consider to be a fairly aggressive budget with respect to system improvements and system hardening. And we spent $10.3 million in last year's budget to that end. And that includes proactive things like trimming trees, which, as I understand from our operations folks, are one of the biggest risks in an event of this type. And we also, through hardening and undergrounding of those lines, those are very strong preventative measures that save us money. And every dollar we invest in that on the front end saves us multiple dollars on the back end. And then finally, strategic emergency planning and adaptation. Larry will speak more to this part on the operations side, but as you know, every year we go through the DDD, and we always have a plan going into a storm, but as you know, that the map is not the territory, and when the storm event occurs, there are emergent conditions that we have to respond to, and Larry will talk about that as well. So we have procedures in place, and we know what we're going to do up to point X, but then those situations may change, and we may have to pivot and alter our approach to a particular event based on new information. And as that information emerges, as you all are, like we are, tuned into those weather forecasts during the storm, we utilize that type of information along with information from our peers, from the governments, and the Emergency Operations Center to gear up and how we're going to handle the storm event as it emerges every day. So then finally, how can KUA recover? Well, we've talked about these a little bit already. FEMA reimbursement is one way. We submit those funds. Initially, every event that we have, we always take the proactive stance, submit it to FEMA. May or may not reimburse it, may or not be eligible for reimbursement. We take that course first off. Secondly, we utilize the reserves in the meantime to keep our customers in a safe position and to pay those costs for the mutual aid crews, and those invoices come in and that work is being done, we pay for that out of our reserves and then anticipate, you know, a FEMA reimbursement if that is to be occurring. And then finally, barring those two events, and this is a last course or last recourse, would be through a rate adjustment in the unfortunate event that reserves were depleted for whatever reason and FEMA was not able to reimburse in a timely manner. We may have to do that through a rate adjustment at some point, but you know, at this point we don't foresee that and don't anticipate that, but that is just one methodology. And we do have some peers in the state who are finding themselves in that very position of having to do that, and KUA is quite fortunate to not be in that position right now. So that's very good for us and for our customers.
Question, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you can.
This is perfect. It's very informational. But what about our customers? Because as a customer myself, and this is not the case, but, you know, as a customer, I demand that KUA brings my service back up as fast as possible. But am I ever aware of how much it's going to cost me to restore the service quickly. So can we somehow relate that back to the customers? That obviously they think that we have insurance, and the insurance is paying for this. They may not know that we're self-insured, but it's the same thing anyway. So they will know that we're insured, that the insurance will pay for it. We probably won't recover from insurance, no matter what insurance company it is. The money quickly. We won't recover from FEMA quickly, but they expect everything quickly. So where is this money going to come from? You know, as I'm a client, I want to know. And I don't think this is ever given to them as information. You know, we are quickly to recover you. That's our objective. That's our priority. But we need money for these things. We do not adjust the rates. We have kept them for so long. But now please understand that this is the situation. The sooner we do it, the more costly it is. And therefore, be aware.
Director Urbina, thank you. That's an excellent point. And there probably is a very good educational opportunity for us in what you're saying. And the truth is, that is a cost that ultimately would be borne by our customers. And I don't know that we have shared the detail of that type of cost to our customers, that they can see that even in an event such as Dorian, which cost us no outages and no customers, it's still a $600,000 price tag. And that's the cost we have now estimated. It, you know, like I said, it could be more. But we always have opportunity.
Madam Chair, Director Urbina, it's certainly something that we can look at. I'm not sure if the timing is better now that we're towards the end of the season. I'm not sure if it's better now to do that education, or do we wait till the 2020 hurricane season when we have that discussion. But I agree, it is worth communicating to our customers so that they understand everything that goes into restoring power. I think, at the beginning of the storm season, that we had some tutorials that were out there that we put on social media that talked about how we restore power and the priority, but we didn't go into the details with respect to, you know, what does it cost and stuff like that. But we can certainly put that in the future.
And a lot of us think that a pole fell, and all you got to do is lift it up and put it back on. And sometimes that's not the case. It has to be replaced and all these other things that are connected. So, you know, our mind is very limited to what we know.
Absolutely.
And maybe they should know more as to what it takes to restore power.
Absolutely.
Annie?
Yeah, just a comment. Whether or not we get reimbursed, I think that this money is well spent. It puts us in a position to be prepared to rapidly deploy and restore, that's what I'm business for, the utilities back to our customer. So it's worthwhile what the staff does with this.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Absolutely. We believe that to be as well.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Jeannie.
We put out a booklet every year, the hurricane booklet. Why can't that be the organ where we put this information in?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Chris. I think he's nodding that. Yes, ma'am. That we'll,
talk
we will
about
certainly
the trade-offs. You know, if we're ready, we can get your power, but...
But you can, it can be put in... If we can understand it, I think most everybody can understand it. So
yes, ma'am.
Put it in... And let them know that we try our best to keep everything down, but in case of a cataclysmic event, and we may have to use the rate adjustment or the funds, and that might mean that we have to charge you more for a while... And we will do our best to stabilize it and maybe get it back down a bit. So, I mean, it's...
I totally agree. Yes, ma'am. That's a great suggestion, Madam Chair. We will certainly take that into consideration. All right, Madam Chair, yes. We will take that into consideration. And every opportunity that we can to educate our customers on what the true cost. And one of the takeaways from this that we'd intended is to share with you, I'm sure you've realized this at this point, is that whatever the storm event is, whether it's zero outages or it's 38,000, there's a cost. And when we gear up for those storms and we start pulling those triggers at the reaction points, there's a cost associated with that we have to incur. And even though the uncertainty of the situation changes, and Larry will talk about how that could have been a higher number, but we made decisions to mitigate that along the way as the conditions change, there are costs associated with those events. And it's a great investment for our customers to understand how that
it's
works.
It's a good story.
Yes, ma'am.
It could
yes,
be a ma'am. Chapter because it's very good information.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair, just also to reiterate, loss of T&D assets to a storm are largely uninsurable. You can't get coverage for it. So absent FEMA or utilization of reserves, like Kevin said, you're left with the rate adjustment. No choice on that.
Madam Chair, I will bring Mr. Larry Mattern up at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Board. I'm here to tell you what we did in the storm. Okay, we have the Dorian timeline. And hearing, it's great feedback, hearing what you expect is what we did. So it was good to know that the staff does know what the board wants, and that is to handle a storm judiciously, smartly. Don't just throw money away, but spend what's necessary. So what we used in our timeline to, I'm going to see if I get the button here. Nope, that's making things move. And we are getting there. You know, I said in the rehearsal that I would do this too, and I keep my promises. So going back to the timeline, up at the top, that's from the National Weather Service. And that's a chart that shows wind speed. And you put in your area code, and the wind speeds predicted come up. And we found those wind speeds were very accurate in the last hurricane. So as each update of where the hurricane's going, these wind speeds are updated. We use this as a guide. Now, this was one that shows an example that it was going to be gust up to 50 mile per hour. The first one of these we received when we were on path, we were seeing gusts of 101. So what we did, we got the plan going. We have a plan that we go over. You know, we have DDD, and we update it every year to be sure that it's current. So we got the plan out, and the plan says you start doing certain preparations. We cleaned up around. They cleaned up at the power plants. We cleaned up around here, anything loose things. And then when we saw it was coming there, then exec had a meeting. And that's when Brian gets the tools for the toolbox for us. So the tools are, okay, what do we have available in mutual aid? Kevin in finance, do you have food vendors lined up? What hotels do we have that are available that we should choose from? Susan, Wilbur, what sort of manpower are we going to have? Chris, are you getting a word out? Everybody's pulled in and involved, every department. So we pull together, we say, okay, this is what's available. And then we start having our daily operation meetings. And this is where we say, okay, we get down, our operations group comes in, because the ops guys are our linemen that you've seen. They're the ones putting hands on. They're the guys in the power plants, got to keep it running. And everyone else becomes support to us, and they do a great job. So we start our daily meetings, you know, when we're seeing 101 and we're thinking the worst. And then we made a request. We said we need mutual aid. So on mutual aid, the request was we got from Minnesota and Wisconsin is who was offered to us. APPA goes nationwide and says, okay, who wants to be in the mutual aid program? Who is willing to be in this, including us? We're part of that. So they get those. And then it comes to FMEA, our state agency. And when a storm comes, like is with a path, it could have went anywhere in our state, FMEA starts making available. Well, you're going to get your coastline or your panhandle. The places where the storms can take the most damage is where the closer ones get offered. And you're not going to see the North Carolinas and the South Carolinas being offered or the Georgias because they may get the storm. So they're slow, just like we're slow to let our folks go until we know the storm's passed. So that's the reason we're that far. If we had a storm tomorrow, we would probably be offered these same groups. There's nothing bad about that. That's the same two groups that came in Irma and helped us do the 3-day turnaround. They were great. I mean, the good thing is they're experienced here, not as much oversight now. They have a feel for what we have here. So we requested from them. So we were for what we saw the storm, we were having a 72 coming, not quite the 80, and we would ask for more or others if the storm came hard. And then we requested tree trimming and the rest. Now, the rest that we asked, those support, that's contract. So contract support says if they get here, they work for us when they get here. So when tree trimmers get here, they said, well, I hope you know, let's wait for the storm. Tree trimmers want to start cutting trees. And our folks that know where our trouble areas are from our experiences where we have a thicker foliage, we sent them there, and they worked the whole time right up to the storm, or right up to the passing of the storm. And then they were released. So we made a complete use of that. So on the 31st, the tree trimmers arrived. We looked at the storm thing, and then we saw something like this, 50 mile per hour at the top. You know, this is about sort of the time we saw that. Well, let's... with this, we really don't need the Wisconsin folks. And we had them staggered because ideal is not to have these folks sitting. You say, we're watching the money, but we want protection. Ideal is have them show up the day after the storm. That's ideal. The day after the storm, then they can get out and we can start putting them in places. You'll see a lot of rounder staging around us, but we're not looking for optics. We're looking for the best product for you folks. And as you said, and we need our folks to realize that our customers know that. So we said, okay, it's not going to be that bad. We can turn Wisconsin back if we need some help. But we still have the other guys on the road, so we'll let them arrive. The fiber support, the reason we have fiber support, your emergency operations center is supported by our fiber and the sheriff's department. So we want to have that. We don't want to lose that. If we did, we want to be able to recover. So that's why we had our fiber optic folks here. Okay, the Minnesota folks got here. We activated standby crews, and that means everybody. We had the line folks were stayed overnight. This is the storms coming. Now, we're pretty sure it's going to be under control, but it hasn't went past us yet. This is the last night before it's parallel and goes past us. So we had those crews stay over. We had folks in a warehouse. We had one of Kevin's folks in the warehouse stay over. Susan had all of her people on alert ready to back up our call center. And Jeff had all his folks ready to go to back up IT. Everything was set to go. It makes the turn to wobble. We're ready. And then we sent staff from our power plants, which put them, because they can be spared quicker than a lineman. We've been pretty fortunate over the years. We've never had an outage in a power plant. We run through every storm, and we ran through this one. So we have the folks at the emergency center, and they take information and call back to our dispatch at different levels of what our community needs. Well, it went by, and we were fortunate. And we felt it was a good insurance policy, and we thought everything was done right. So we released the mutual aid, and they went back. We released the tree trimmer, the extra tree trimmers, and they went back. And then we had our final operation meeting, and then after that, soon after that, then we had an exec meeting, and we pulled everything together and did, you know, look back. So what we learned is every storm is different, and everyone has a different cost. The preparation we did, as you saw, the difference in the preparation, 0.6 mil of the 600,000 was almost what we don't get reimbursed on a regular storm. It's almost the same amount. That's the insurance. That's what you pay to be ready, and we were ready. Because you could have that Charlie, and you could have that Irma. I mean, so we're saying we're fortunate that we didn't have those. So all storms have a cost. Was KUA prepared? Yes, we were. It was probably the best crew of my career that I've seen. The best non-event I've ever seen. We couldn't have been more ready for anything than what this group that we have here were. It was quite a group. So we executed the plan, and there's folks at power plant. And as I said, the power plant ran right through, as it always does. We adapted to the storm, and by releasing things, by winding down, by saving money. And we were prepared. So are there any questions? Yes.
Based on your experiences this past time, what else would need to be done in the future? Anything? Because I know some people, I'm sure they were here more than 24 hours at a go. Or is there anything that is needed to support the people that are, you know, supporting the storm?
At this point, no. We plan so that we don't have 24-hour folks here. We'll let them go at 18 at maximum. What we do in a plan, the storm would have been because of safety issues at night and under storm conditions, under hurricane conditions, we don't know what you have out there, what's been changed. We work 16 hours. We work 16-hour shifts. So we plan for that. And we have 80 people came to our one storm we are at, or assisted. We asked for 72 this time because of what, as the storm started to shift away from us. 80 is about the most we could effectively have here. I don't see a lot of things we, in the planning course, we didn't get into the storm, so we didn't see the mistakes. Planning wise, it was, these folks did a great job. Everything was covered. We have these folks come in now. It's a plant. You guys come in tonight. Next group, follow up. Linemen, here's our night crew, but you guys go home. We have guys coming back and you write up. We didn't have everybody there that night. We had them as it came through, and if it would have hit, we had people the next day. So there's not really, other than the understanding and support that you've shown tonight, I think we're on the same page on how to restore.
I've got a question. I was consulting, how do I call on myself?
She's in charge.
I know a lot of the expense of getting the crews here from out of state, especially from that far, is getting the equipment here. Mm-hmm. And do you have any idea percentage-wise how much of that $600,000 is equipment arrival versus people arrival?
Well, Kevin actually looked at the number. Before he gives you that number, let me tell you what a piece of equipment costs so you can see the magnitude of what we're paying. For us to get a truck ready to go and without the crew, I get a truck, I don't even put gas in. If I put all the equipment on, I sit it out there, it's $350,000. That's what it costs us to have one truck. We had about 20 of them down here. So, Kevin, what was the cost of the...
Madam Chair, to answer that question, as we're still getting estimates, so we looked at IRMA to see what some of those typical invoices look like for mutual aid. And to give you an idea, the way that typically works is when they bring trucks down from their locales to here, there's a fee charge per hour for the use of those vehicles. And generally, it's anywhere from $40 to $50 per hour of use. And what we saw in IRMA, and because we haven't really looked at the invoices here yet from the most recent storm, with IRMA, the mutual aid costs for labor were around $300,000. And the vehicle charges for that equipment were on the magnitude of $30,000 to $40,000. So it's roughly
kind of
about
half and half.
Yeah, or 10%. So the $300,000 and the vehicles are $30,000.
Oh,
so
okay.
So it's at about 10 to 15%. Now a lot of that, if you're thinking about, you know, as you bring them down, what are the logistics and how does that work? Because you still have to pay hotel fees for most of them coming from longer distance.
Right.
So you've got those fees. So you're not just paying equipment fees for that. But as Larry mentioned, if you have a bucket truck that we typically pay around $354, and then when those vehicles come in, you know, it costs us, you know, for that one event was around $35,000 or $40,000.
Are we having different crews use internally, different crews using our trucks so that they're used 24 hours a day?
We would switch on the trouble trucks. Most of the trucks, the crews have the crews. But the point is, we need if we were full out in a storm, we would need everything, and we can't work 24 hours on restoration because of hurricane. What's left if it's we need restoration? What's left at night? We will make a middle of the night repair, as you see. You know, somebody's a transformer goes out, but to go out and do hurricane restoration, that's construction, and we bring our guys back at dusk. You know, we get that 16 hours and we start pulling them back when we get towards the end of 16 hours to get into the dark. So we don't have really the benefit, wouldn't benefit anything if we had 20, we can't do 24. It's not really safe. It's not impossible. It's not very safe. So we don't do that. It's not part of our plan. But we still got the restoration in short order without doing that.
Okay. Right.
We can do some of the smaller stuff. I think it's worth mentioning that the industry, in particular public power, is having discussions about how do we better prepare for these situations. There was a time when storms would come through that we would allow the storm to come through, and then we would send our assessors out into the field, and they would assess the damage, and then we would make a determination for how much aid we think we need to restore the system. But rising customer expectations, you know, that's what we're talking about, and managing that and balancing that. So I've had conversations with some of my peers. I'm having conversations with Amy, and we're talking about ways, to utilize some of our brother and sister public power utilities way out west. But to your point, we would have to fly them in, but what equipment do they use, and how does that work? So we're having those discussions. Nothing has been decided, but we are having the other thing that we're talking about is, you know, when you bring these mutual aid crews here, and Larry kind of hit on this, when a contract crew comes that we've got them under contract, we can put them to work as soon as they get here. Tree trimmers, y'all go to work. We're paying you. Mutual aid's a little different, or at least as it exists today. They come here, and you can't use them on construction, right, on pre-stuff. They're here for the way the agreements are structured, it's restoration. So I've charged Grant and Larry to work with our brother and sister utilities and our state trade association to figure out a way that we can put them to work once they get here. Because the way the industry is moving, you're not going to get around pre-staging, you know, to be able to meet customer expectations. We're going to have to bring those resources down.
And I think my question comes from a point of view. We've got X number of trucks here 24 hours a day, and our crews can only work so many hours a day. Could we bring in other people that could supplement and use our equipment? I mean, you'd obviously have some of our guys on every truck, every shift.
But it would be at night, which is not a good idea, because we would be doing it if it was a good idea.
We don't have the staff to do 24 hours a day on the truck, because we've only got...
It's a good idea, and that's why we looked into it. But right now, the dollars on it, the value of one of their trucks here is $350,000, and we pay $30,000 for all the ones that gave us relief over the three-day period of the last hurricane. So right now, we're not seeing it prohibitive on cost. $30,000, money's money. But we're still seeing comparison to the piece of equipment. And also, yeah, it would tie up our manpower, because anytime we're putting somebody else out, two things. One, it's unfamiliar equipment to them, and certainly unfamiliar area for them. That's why 80 is about as much help we can actually take into our area right now, but to have enough crew to go out and make sure they're familiar and take them safely to get to the place in the daylight. So when we start spreading them overnight, it's a big safety issue. And if we were paying, $500,000 to get 20 trucks down here, it's really something to look at it hard. But right now, when 10% of what we paid for mutual aid was the trucks in that particular case, we don't see the risk reward, but we will pursue it if that's what you.
I'm surprised they don't charge mileage.
Well, they typically will charge, Madam Chair. They'll charge fuel expenses, and they'll also charge an hourly rate for those vehicles. And those rates kind of determine, but they're usually like a FEMA rate. And I think our mutual aid contract says the rate they charge themselves on an internal basis is what they can charge us in that contract. And it's the ones I looked at were about $45 or $50 an hour for vehicle time. So that's windshield
not bad
time and
compared to no
matter. And the beauty of mutual aid is we're sharing each other's equipment at our cost. And that's the difference between even a grant argument, it's hard to get the folks. Well, when you get here, start doing some of our regular work. When they're here at their cost, it's not a profit center. The profit folks, when they're here, no, you have a contract to do profit stuff. You do work as soon as you hit here. But as Brian said, expectations are higher. To give you comfort, we don't operate like they did in the days when you spend the first day or two doing assessment. We assess. In fact, we had an assessor meeting. That was one of the things I guess I could have showed. It was a meeting of all the assessors to say, remind you, here's how you go out, here's how you take the FEMA things, make sure we have all the stuff so we do get the FEMA money, if possible. So here's what you want to see in the damage to write down for FEMA. Here's how you identify it. But while they're driving, our trucks are right behind. It's not our T&D guys doing this. We bring in other folks from the company, and we use the whole company in this, and we did, and it was great to see. But we train other folks to do that out of our engineering department folks. They go out and make those assessments. They're engineers. They understand the T&D. They go out and make these assessments and come back with it and while are doing it, and they're calling, and we're behind them with the trucks. So we're as efficient to get to the new expectations that our customers want to get back. And that had a lot to do why you saw it return in 3 days last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madam Chair, I sit in the executive of Emergency Management Center. When we activate the executive group, this was a unique storm that kept us without sleep, watching and babysitting. The nickname was the crawler, because it was crawling. But imagine having a box of putting a puzzle together, and it's done through the Emergency Management Center. KUA is in there, OUC is in there in the Management Center, and we start relaying messages out as it starts getting closer, and that's how they also prepare. So it's not like KUA is just going to call crews in at any time. There's certain times that they, that call needs to be put out, and everything works in such a fine way. And when it comes to preparation, I can tell you that every year after we go through a storm, then we start now meeting at the Emergency Management Center
to say what work, what can we change, and every year we find an improvement, right? So, you know, when it comes to shelters, we never used to have shelters for the employees that worked in the storm. Then we made the decision of creating a shelter for the employees and their families that worked in the storm. We started getting a better response from the employees of all the entities that worked in the storm. You know, so every year you're learning something new, you're preparing yourself for everything else. And so, I mean, KUA did a tremendous job. I think this entire county did a great job. We were prepared. Those that said that we, you know, it was all a scare, well, guess what? It's better to be safe than sorry, and that's what we kept telling the public. When we had order to do the where no one could be out in the street, you know, the sheriff waited till the last moment to call it off because of the last news that we received from the storm that it was shifting. So everything is done accordingly to information that we receive, and you know, the guys here from KUA are there receiving that information firsthand. One conversation I did have with your CEO today was, I'm going to recommend to the executive board of the Emergency Management Center to have a representative from KUA and OUC sit in the Executive Management Center, because when we make decisions in executive, it takes a while before it goes out to the planning room. And I don't know if you guys have ever done a tour, and we can work on giving them a tour so they can show them how all those departments work in here and everyone that we have in there. But I'm going to make a recommendation to the executive board to have our CEO and Larry sit in the executive and have someone from OUC there so they get firsthand information as we're making decisions in there before. Because when we make the decision, the first thing we do is we go and put it as a media briefing, and then it goes to the back, and we could be losing time there. So I'm going to be making that request this year.
Madam Chair?
Uh-huh.
I appreciate that, but at the same time, don't we need our people here handling their job for KUA rather than in an off-site place? I think every one of us, we don't have that many people that we can spare.
Well, we have people.
They have to be here.
Yeah, we have people that sit in the command center. We have people that sit in the command center itself. What I'm talking about is having someone from executive from KUA sit in the executive board to get that direct information. Because we'll send the information once we make a decision in the executive room. That information gets sent to the command center. But imagine if we have one of our executives sitting in that executive meeting, getting that information, being part of the decision making.
Well, I just, because we make those decisions ourselves. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if we're adding a layer here where we. Does anybody understand what I'm saying?
I think we
need to work with the city, but we certainly have our own command center that we have to staff.
So the mayor is correct that we do have representatives at the EOC.
Right.
And what he's talking about is the executive committee that isn't staffed 24/7.
No.
It's daily meetings. The appropriate person at KUA would not be our vice president of operations, because he's going to be getting the lights on.
Okay, very good. That's where it
would either be someone like me, or maybe corporate communications. Most likely, it would be me.
Okay, that concerned me, because we do not need our people at a command center.
And by the way, the EOC is not the city of Kissimmee. The EOC is the entire county. Okay.
Yes, I understand.
The EOC is the entire county and government entities that are part of the EOC.
I understand that. I was on that myself at one time, but I just wanted, that's what I wanted to make sure, that our people were not being taken away from what they should be doing.
Ethel?
The season isn't over, right? So we're still on plan.
Yes.
If something was to happen right now, we're ready.
We're on plan all the time, but we little more on our toes when you know it could come any day, but no, we're always ready for restoration.
Well, and y'all dispersed good information to the community too through Facebook and all that. I could keep track of what was happening just through KUA's communications. And I watched the other meetings, but y'all did a good job of giving folks information. Okay. Anything else? No other questions? Then we have no public hearing, no old business, no new business. Staff reports.
Yes, Madam Chair. Larry Madden, Vice President of Operations, is going to provide us a condensed semi-annual report.
Good evening again. I want to talk about the hurricanes. I'm kidding you. This is some very quick department highlights. This department, we represent KUA at Florida Gas Utility, which they've had two new members add, Gulf Breeze and also Jacksonville Beach. And they've also got prepaid gas for us to help keep our costs down that we're buying at FMPA, who also we meet with, that we represent you there. And they're using that to keep your rates down by lower cost of fuel. The power pole is running as it has. It's still been well for us. We have FMPA, we sell into the pool a lot, and that helps keep your rates down also. But now the operations department. Our power supply division, this is the EAF. It shows how available. That means how often the units are there when they need to be there. The red line going across is the national average. Natural average, that number is around 85%, and it's been that way for a few years. That's normally what that national average is. Here's our 18 and 19 numbers for all the units down at Kane Island. Unit 4 was about wet the national average because it had a planned outage, and you all went down and saw it. In 18, as you see, we're well above the national average in almost, we are in every category. So Jay Butters and the group down there is doing an excellent job. I'm not allowed to say that number unit 3 broke a record. I can't say a number because Jay said it's bad luck. But as for running consecutive days, and now he's shooting to beat the FMPA record of the Treasury Coast unit has it because it's left on all the time for that support. So a record is on its way, hopefully. Now Jay says I jinxed him. A great job, Jay, and you and all the crew down there. All right, here's the news that you might have seen in there. Your Sadie. Our goal for the Sadie, and that's how many minutes we're off on average. As you see, we do really good. Our goal up top is to stay below FMPA be up at least 5% below. Well, we're even that now. But you see, in July, and actually your August one's up about that high, slightly down. It's a rolling 18-month average. So now that we have the one big one, they're going to stay big until we have really excellent. If we keep improving, which we should, they should come down. What's the cause? Not the excuse. What's the reason? Weather. We had 39 storms in that month of most of them high-intensity lightning, if you folks remember the end of July, early August. We usually have that in all the months of summer. And they seem to go to Brian and I's and Ms. Henfield's house. I think they were targeted. but so we know the path. So what are we doing about that? Man, it was bad weather. What can we do? Well, we can do a lot of things. As you saw before, last year, we put $11 million or $10 million worth in maintenance and upgrades. We're still doing that. We put 33,000 feet of underground replacement as we speak. That's actually guys working on outage in that picture. But we constantly do upgrades on the system. We have pole inspections. So then we said, okay, well, we have a problem here. That doesn't mean we need to. Just because we had a bunch of lightning one year, we don't stop trying to get better. How can we improve this? So we have studies going on. Yesterday and today, we have drones like this one flying all of our lines, already identified two places on the Pleasant Hill Road where we saw lightning hit some of our poles. And so what do we do there? Do we do more lightning protection? Do we put suppressors more often? But it gives us it tells us what do we need to do to improve the system. But first, see how much it costs, so we can balance the cost of reliability with the cost of power. And we also do soil testing, and as I said, we test the poles to make sure they're all in good stead. And the last thing we're doing to improve this, we're going to have advanced technology application, but we have our smart meters going. That's really going to help us identify things in a much granular. You know, we'll be able to see if we start seeing meters going out in an area, and then how we can help that. Also, we can add reclosers on the line. Right now, we have things. If you notice your lights go out one, two, and then that was it, and the lights stay on. Well, if it says three, then they're going to stay off. But we have reclosers. If a branch happens to hit, a limb hits, or if lightning hits one time and not really strong, it'll take it off, but it'll let it come back in. We're going to put some of these so that we can sectionalize some of our long runs instead of just the whole run goes out because you got a hit here. On the second time, this fault might stay out, so you may have, you know, a few hundred customers off instead of 1,000. So this is some things we can add on. Again, have costs. We'll weigh the cost on how much we can make that work for us so we don't have as big of outages when we do have the lightning. So that's something we're looking at. Also, fault detectors. But with the smart meters out there and the technology of the information give us back gives us a lot of different avenues. We've also put an extra person on top about expectations. We're back to we're going to be to full power in our dispatch center and emergency control center or energy control center. What we'll have in there is two dispatchers per shift. Safe for having two people night and day. Also, the expectation is when a storm's going on, our customers want to know what's going on. Chris wants to know what's going on. He calls me all the time. But what with the second person in there, we can call out trucks and coordinate them better with two. Also, we can get over to responder. We can have that map updated like that. We can say the cause is this. Because when somebody's trying to call trucks in and get all this lined up, if you go in there, it's chaos in there. We actually had a big outage after one of the meetings about 3 or 4 months ago. And I wish you could have all came in and seen the activity in there. The activity for one person and get the news out to you, by the way, and hey, we're back on here with that. It's hard to do, but we're going to improve that because that's what the customers expect, and we're here to serve the customer. And it will give us quicker restoration, too, with two folks working. So that's about it. Oh, but hands everywhere.
Madam? I have a question. Okay, Jenny. I have a question. I've been noticing on my computer, we've been a lot of notifications of outages recently. And is there a reason for that?
You say you've had a lot of notifications?
Of outages.
Yes. The reason is squirrels. We weren't getting them out as quick. We didn't have, and that's part of the thing, getting the second person. We're in a process of upgrading our software. We're in the process of curing some of the issues on it before. So if the number of outages may or may not change, I don't think we've had an increased number in the last month or so, but we have really
just in the past week or two that they're just hitting. Like one day there was four or five, and it just seemed more than what normal.
Well, we've had a couple in the last few weeks. We've had some have been completely off. We've had some animals. That's one of the things we're doing, too. We're adding the guards. We had a squirrel a couple of days ago. We had yesterday we had a raccoon. But the good or bad news is the feedback we get from the customer is, I want to know what's going on. If it's off, just tell me what's going on. I can understand it more. You know, if we showed the picture where we had one of our panels had a hole burn in it, if they see that, they don't have the expectation of power back in 15 minutes. No. They have an expectation, which is going to be an hour or so. And so we're trying to do that and working hard. So I guess it's good news. We're doing our job right if we're getting the things out to you.
Yeah, because they come right back up. I mean, it was power outage, and 25 minutes later, it's back online. But there's been a lot of them. I just was wondering that.
We're getting the information out because that's what our public wants, and that's what you should know. They should know.
And that's all. I'm just wondering.
It's all the rabbits and squirrels out there, no doubt. Oh, Madam Chairperson.
Sure.
You compared us earlier, KUA outages, to the state.
Well, that's the
FMPAs.
That's about the state of cities.
Okay. But do we have something that does the national, is this track at the national level, and if they do track it, how do we compare at the national level? And second part, if does APPA, do they track it? And if so, how do we compare within that?
Ryan wants to handle that.
I'll take that. The answer is yes, APPA does track it. The nature of Florida is a lot different than elsewhere in the country. There are communities elsewhere that perform a lot better than Florida, but in Florida, when you compare, given the storms, the foliage, we compare extremely well versus not only our public power peers, but also the IOUs in the state as well.
So you're saying, in other words, it would be difficult to compare us to...
Yeah, just the dynamics.
In the middle of the country or somewhere else?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Anything else?
Because of weather, but because of system, they basically using the same system.
The system is the same, but we get weather. I mean, during our summer months, we get storms, thunderstorms every afternoon. Well, that doesn't happen in the Midwest, right? So, and the only thing that you can back out of the reliability numbers are named storms. So, named storms when Hurricane Irma went through, none of those outages were included in our SAIDI numbers because a natural disaster was declared. So it's just different in Florida, a little more challenging.
To answer some of that, is there a way to, are the numbers available to compare us to an average or something?
Well, that's what we do when the average for the FMPA cities, which is nearly every municipal, that is the line that you see that where that I showed you on, I don't know if it's in that one, I forget, but it's actually here.
That's the
FMPA. So that's, I'll report it in that. So that's 31 of them. So that's how we compare in that is for that. So that's a lot of the utilities, and there's not much left after that. And we're not shooting to say, well, as long as we're underneath that, we're fine. No, that's why we're having drones flying. We're calling, and we also put in for a grant to see if, speaking of lightning, and I'm glad I remembered this before Susan hit me when I sat down because she told me to say this, that we were putting in for a grant, and if we get it, hopefully we get it. And what it is, it is an actual lightning study, and it's a lightning technology. It's the sort of thing that it may or may not work, and it's we hate to start just putting ratepayer dollars on it. But with a grant, we'll say, well, maybe it's worth taking a try if it's not money out of pocket to do. And if they have something that works that helps some of the lightning strikes, avoid that, then we'll use it. But that's one other thing. Again, we know we're still good and we're doing good compared to others, but that's not good enough. But that wasn't good enough when all the people were out those 2 weeks in late July and early August. And we get that.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, we'll move on to hear the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and congratulations to you and all the officers and board members for the election. I only have one item for you and the board. Last month, the board approved the Fifth Amendment to KUA Transfer Agreement. As part of that approval, the board approved the plat for the lakefront development, which includes a Hansel substation and the distribution and transmission facilities going in and out in substantial form. So we're still waiting for the plat to be completed and the chair and the secretary to sign that. While undertaking title review for certifying the plat, the city's title attorneys discovered there were two other utility easements that they need a release from KUA for. So I've reviewed the release. Staff has reviewed it. It looks good. The easements involved that we're releasing are in the public interest. It doesn't impair the easements we're getting back for our facilities. But I just want to let you know that I'll be presenting that to you and our secretary for signature tonight after the meeting. Other than that, congratulations.
Okay, you've got your reminders there on the screen. And then I just have a bit of good news that I want to share. Susan shared with me yesterday that we are ahead of schedule in our AMI deployment. We've got 10% of the meters changed out, correct? About 8,500 of the meters in. So that's really, really good news. I'm proud of her and the rest of the team. And this Friday, we have our first Movies in the Park series this year. So hope to see some of you there. I will be there. Thank you.
Hi.
Madam Chair, first of all, congratulations on your new position and to the rest of the board members. October is always a very important month. October, we actually is Cancer Awareness Month. And also Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So please keep those large issues at hand in front of us. You know, which is in our commission meeting yesterday, in our moment of silence, we remember Weech's loss, a state trooper on the 27 with a tragic accident, a young man that was 4 years in the force. And so please keep him and his family and all his partners in your thoughts and prayers. His name was Victor Tracy Vickers was his name. Thank you.
I'd like to say another thank you to everybody that worked the storms. Regardless of what you did, it's all appreciated. And just from a personal standpoint, I would like to have everybody take a look at, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and as a survivor of breast cancer, get your mammograms, and it doesn't affect just women, men can get it too.
Jeannie?
Just thank you for this meeting. It was really a very, very good meeting. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Congratulations, you've done a great job. It's a seamless change here. And
we'll see.
Good luck to you. And other than that, happy Halloween. I'm all excited about that.
That's all.
Nothing. Thank you to the staff. Thank you for the new elections. We try to do the best job we can. And that's it.
Manny.
And a couple of things. Jeannie, I want to personally thank you for the past 2 years as chairperson. You've been patient with us.
You've been patient with me.
You've shown great leadership, and I'm a study of people, and I've learned a lot from you. Sitting in, hopefully that'll make me a better director on this board.
Good, you're making me.
New chairperson, congratulations. Big shoes to fill, but no doubt you meet the challenge for the next year. And third, staff. I was really impressed earlier. I like to observe what goes on around me. When at the beginning of the agenda, when we were calling up individuals for awards, did you notice, I don't know if you guys noticed, the standing ovations? That shows that there's a lot of mutual respect and love for each other within KUA. It means a lot to me to be associated with KUA. You don't see that in many places. And it wasn't that the linesman was just standing for the linesman. Everyone, individual departments that were called up, everyone was standing up. I've been around for a few years, and you normally don't see that at companies. So this must be a great place to work at. So, and that's also an indication of high morale. And it's also a big indication of the staff, you guys, vice presidents, and the leadership of KUA. It's just a great indication that you guys are doing a fantastic job. So like I said, I'm very proud to be associated with.
Good for you guys.
Well, I certainly second everything you said and appreciate Jeannie for all her work, and I'll try to keep it up and go forward.
Sure you will.
But I appreciate y'all's confidence. So,
now
we have to have a motion to adjourn, right?
If be no further business.
Whatever you want.
We've never done it.
If be no further business.
Seeing no further business, we will adjourn.